the pink hibiscus mealybug, which I'll refer to as PHM, is a highly prolificous pest that feeds on ornamental and agricultural plants. It's widely distributed in South Florida already, has reached Louisiana, and has reached Texas, and is considered a threat to southern states. So, due to its wide host range and distribution, reliance on insecticide is not practical, as well as the fact that biological control agents don't eradicate this pest. So in 2004, the sex pheromone was ID'd for this pest, and future use of sex pheromones as monitoring tools and thus making management decisions is a major component of my dissertation. In addition to the waxy coating and egg masses caused by typical mealybugs, the pink hibiscus mealybug, PHM, has a toxic saliva that deforms flowers and foliage, causing what's commonly known as bunchy top. Here we can see a clean plant that was infested with 10 adult females and their egg sac, and within 21 days, the bunchy top was exhibited there, and that's what the problem looks like and why we're concerned with it. So there's a variety of gaps in the knowledge of PHM and problems associated with monitoring, and the information related to dispersal capabilities is necessary for predicting, modeling, and managing this pest, and is not known. In addition, infested plants don't always exhibit PHM symptoms. It's not obligatory. Infested plants can have PHM and not exhibit the bunchy top, as well as the fact that there's unknown relationships between population density of an infestation with aerially dispersing individuals and population density and the number of males captured within a sex pheromone trap. So my ultimate objective is to describe the predictive ability and correlation between sex pheromone trap data and PHM infestation levels to better monitor this pest, thus making management decisions. So, as I mentioned, the PHM bunchy top is not obligatory. So here you can see a variegated cultivar of hibiscus. It shows no bunchy top, but within 1 year, completely defoliated. And those little leaves down there don't show any bunchy top. So they're still, well, relatively healthy. And we captured 1,320 PHM males in a two-week period with a single trap. So I consider that a high level of PHM. Similar thing happened at this site. You can see the sprawling hibiscus in a year, completely defoliated, no bunchy top. Even at the golf course, which usually has a typically intensive management program, we captured males here the previous year, completely defoliated a year later, and the problem is, if people don't see the bunchy top, they might not think PHM is present or not present in high enough levels to cause damage. But we need a good sex pheromone program to kind of see what's happening to the plants that don't exhibit this bunchy top and what's actually happening in the surrounding area. So, I only have 10 minutes, so I'm only going to address some of the questions that I'm dealing with, such as, do PHM disperse aerially? Do abiotic environmental factors influence aerial dispersal of PHM? And over what distance can PHM disperse aerially? To evaluate aerial dispersal and abiotic factors, 5 hibiscus were equally infested with PHM, 2 were left uninfested as controls. Sticky traps surrounded the infested hibiscus at 8 compass directions, 1 meter from the plant, and traps were initially replaced at 2-day intervals until we captured consistent levels of aerially dispersing individuals, then at 4-hour intervals for 7 days. We counted all PHM captured and recorded abiotic factors at 4-hour intervals corresponding with the changing of the traps. We recorded solar radiation, wind speed, temperature at 2 meters above the ground, relative humidity, and rain. But the rain didn't total more than an inch for the entire 7-day period, so it wasn't included in the analysis. Here's what the setup looked like. You can see our infested plants surrounded by the traps. The traps are 8 by 8 inches, so it's a relatively good size based on the literature. And the plants were considered heavily infested, so they're about as infested as the plants can get for their size. So here we can see the directionality. These are the directions that the traps were oriented around the plant, and this is for all individuals, first instar through adult. They were predominantly first instar, which we captured, and the means were calculated by summing all 5 replicates and using all time periods for the day and using the days as replicates. You can see that the most were captured in the western portion because the wind is easterly, so there's a directionality with the prevailing wind. So since easterly wind comes from the east, most in the west, and ANOVA showed a significant difference, and the Tukey separated it accordingly. So the next largest was Southwest and Northwest. Here we can see the different time intervals PHM were captured at, and we can see that they show circadian periodicity, and through analysis of variance, the most mealybugs were captured at 2 p.m. to 6 p.m., and then second most between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Using a stepwise linear regression and Mallow CP regression, which had the similar results to this, wind speed was the most significantly important factor involved, and temperature also had a significant impact, and all four abiotic factors together explain 62% of the variation, so it's pretty heavily influenced by these abiotic factors. And you can say, well, is it just wind speed causing all this dispersal? Because maybe they just passively disperse, but I believe it's due to behavior that they're actually dispersing. They're exhibiting a dispersal behavior. So if we look at the maximum values for our abiotic factors, we have wind speed, temperature, solar radiation, arranged as it was in the previous regression slide. And here we have our max, min, and then the two highest values for the 4-hour intervals was 11:32 and 10:55. And the abiotic variable or abiotic factors for these captures were pretty moderate compared to the maximum and minimum. So I believe that they are selecting for a variety of factors, but to not speculate, we're going to systematically investigate how wind speed alone affects it, and as well as the others. So to evaluate dispersal distance, five plants, hibiscus, were infested with PHM. The sticky traps were placed 1, 5, 10, and 25 or 50 meters downwind. There was a vertical trap 1.5 meters off the ground and a horizontal trap 0.25 meters off the ground. Traps and distance were changed daily. PHM were counted, as happened for a 10-day duration, and abiotic factors were recorded. So here's what the stand looks like. We have our vertical trap 1.5 meters away, our horizontal trap 0.25 meters away, and this is what the field site looked like for a 5-meter spaced plant. And again, the plants were heavily infested. So our wind speeds were similar to the previous study. Our abiotic factors were similar to the previous study. And what we saw was that here we have our different meters, 1 through 50, and then the number of PHM captured on the vertical trap, and the horizontal trap. And this is only for a single plant, so the numbers may look a little low compared to the previous study, but instead of having five plants, we just have a single plant, and that's for all stages. And so there was no significant difference between the horizontal trap, which you can kind of see a little numerical difference. They were making a little bit further than the 1 meter. And you can see that the 1 meter trap captured significantly more dispersing individuals than did any of the others. And what's interesting to note is that they can disperse up to 50 meters, which is pretty significant because they're hitting a small 8 by 8 inch trap 50 meters away. And all of this is being done to determine the risk for a surrounding area for dispersing individuals. So my conclusions are that PHM dispersed aerially, that dispersal shows a directionality with the prevailing wind, the dispersal shows a circadian periodicity, that is, seems to be strongly diurnal, the dispersal is influenced by abiotic factors, and dispersal distance of at least 50 meters can occur. So this information will contribute to the predictive ability and correlation between sex pheromone trap data and PHM infestation levels, and then that will help us make decision management decisions. So there's more that needs to be known, such as how far males can search out pheromone traps. There's a bunch of management tactics being used. How do those relate to trap capture? And again, the relationships between densities of infestation and other factors, which if I had more than 10 minutes, I'd love to share with you. So I'd like to thank all the people involved and answer any questions. South Florida is a nice place to work. So. Yes. Maybe I didn't make that clear, but this was for aerial dispersal of crawlers. So we were looking at the crawler dispersal so that we can associate dispersal of crawlers in the future with capture of males. Yes?
You said the area is highly infested. How did you not test for them not to blow in from the back of the field?
That's a very excellent question. I only had 10 minutes. So we did a control Before we put out the traps, we tested to see if there were any males in the area, and then if we couldn't find any males. Well, we also had, we had the sticky traps up, and then we tested to see if there were any crawlers hitting the traps before we put the plants out, and then we also surveyed the surrounding area if there were any, like, local infestation or resident populations. That's it?
Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot.